It's on! Hell yeah! Two crispy cold openings, and it is 5 o'clock somewhere, ladies and gentlemen. It's 5:50 here, and there is probably a beer in a lot of your guys' hands on this Friday night. Yeah. It's sunny. Weather's nice. It's the weekend. We're partying it up. Welcome to number 86 of The Covert Show, and folks, oh boy, it's good to be back. We've had a little bit of a hiatus. Last episode was March 15th, but today, we're back, and we're bringing it to you.
I mean, we're thrilled to be here. I mean, there's sports to talk about. There's a baseball to talk about. We're cracking open an ice cold Bud Light on this wonderful Friday. It's another Friday special. I feel like our podcasts have been recorded later and later in the week as we've gone along. You know, it started out on a solid Tuesday, Wednesday. Now it's become like late Thursday, Friday, or even Saturday, but someday we're going to get to 100. That's all I'm saying. We're at 86, so, I mean, someday we're going to get there.
We got to get there, man. And I mean, it's coming around the bend. But, yeah, we've had a little bit of some scheduling stuff. We've had a couple of hiatuses going on.
Just busy, man.
It's getting that time of year, man. JC's got sports to cover. I'm getting into turkey season coming up on Monday. We're going right around the bend. It's, I mean, there's no stopping right now. Like, this is the time where you push through and you just get going. And shit, it was tax season, too. I mean, there's everything going on. Good Lord.
Yeah, you just made a lot of people cringe when you said that part.
I cringed a little bit, too. It's one of the worst times of the year, man. You just got to see, yep, this is how much money I'm literally paying for them to send money elsewhere. That's cool. Not even coming back.
The only question I'm going to ask about taxes is whether you file your own or do you go and have an accountant do it?
Oh, no, I got a guy. You think my math skills are that good for this shit? Hell no.
He's got a guy. What, did you join the mafia since we last did a podcast? He's got a guy.
I got a guy.
Out in Brooklyn, out on Long Island. Well, I was just saying that because for the first time in my adult life, I actually filed my own taxes, kind of.
And how did that go?
Going through H&R, or not H&R Block, TurboTax. Fine.
Wow.
Nothing happened. Been good.
Wow. Congratulations.
I mean, I don't have a lot going on. It's not like I have an interesting tax return. I mean,
oh, nope. That was the wrong one. I have an applause here somewhere. That's scary. Well, tax season is scary, folks.
Wow.
That's still the wrong one. We don't have an applause on this one. We're just running through the board noises.
We're just test running a board. My bathroom for a loop. I was like, what the hell is that?
That's going to scare some viewers. Oh, boy.
Well, my freaking blood pressure. The heart's thumping.
Oh, folks.
The roof, not blood pressure. We have the IQ of zero right now.
Zero, yeah.
Terrifying moment. Oh, mercy.
Well, it's been a terrifying moment for some teams around the good old league. If you guys haven't figured out, we're big baseball people, and you know what? Opening day was last week. Well, for some teams, it's been terrifying since then. For some teams, it's been on the up and up, but we'll go through the terrifying teams first because, you know, it's just going to be terrifying for them all day, all year long. So far, if you're an Oakland A's fan, you're now a Sacramento A's fan. So congratulations. You guys still move cities, but you won't play in Vegas until 2027. So,
and here's the best part of that on the jerseys. And I don't know if this is a satire take or not, so take it for what it's worth. After they leave Oakland, there's going to be no labeling of Sacramento on anything.
Bro,
it's just,
are you serious?
Going to say Athletics. I don't know. We might want to double check that. Send that to the double checking department. But based on what I've seen, might have been an April Fool's post. But that's what I've seen is there's not going to be any Sacramento. Which, I mean, let's be honest, it makes sense because going to Sacramento to start with is weird. If you ask me, like, just stay in Oakland for another 2 years.
Yeah, what's it going to do to you?
I mean, Vegas is going to be, I think, like you said, 27, 28, whatever it is. I mean, you're already going to suffer this year. You're going to be terrible. You might not be the worst team in the league. We'll talk about why that's the case here in a minute, but I don't know. Maybe it's just because the fans are actively boycotting this team, And so ownership's like, where can we put this team before we send it to Vegas to, you know, salvage what money we can, I guess.
Yeah. Which, in all honesty, like, I feel bad for A's fans because, I mean, this team has been bad for years now. I mean, it used to be decent, but this is like an all-time low.
Removed.
No.
I think, wasn't it 2015 or 16 where they had that playoff?
15. They played the Royals in the wild card.
Yeah.
It was 2015.
Yeah. So it's not that far removed, 9 years, but, you know, as a Blue Jays fan, the playoff wins stopped right around
allude.
There, too. So, you know, but it's not like you're like a 20-year team. Like, that. Remember that run Toronto had in 2015 when they finally broke through and it had been like 1993 to 2015 where they hadn't made the playoffs? Oakland isn't that.
No, it's just been the last or 7 years they've gone downhill.
And, I mean, ownership's done no favors to themselves. I mean, you have players that are wearing wristbands from I can't remember the name of the store, that's basically not 100% anti-ownership, but pretty much like more supporting of like, here's, you know, more on the side of the fans, that are getting sent down and demoted. Like,
yeah,
you got to do something. I mean, here's the bright side for A's fans, and I'm going to say this here in 2024 so we can look back on this someday and go, wow, what a smart guy. Or what a dumbass. Whatever happens here. Oakland, you're going to Vegas, and every team that's not named the Raiders so far as of 2024 has gone there and has just lit the place on fire.
Yep.
So you look at the Vegas Golden Knights. They make a Stanley Cup run in their first season. They win it in their sixth season. They've missed the playoffs once. They're a perennial West Coast team. You look at the Las Vegas A's. They've won 1, 2, 3, however many titles in a row they're working with now. I mean, everything that goes to Vegas seems to work out. So not that the next 4 years of misery is going to be fun, but you might have that to look forward to. I don't actually believe that, but it seems to be the thing when teams go to Vegas. Nobody believed in the Golden Knights either when that whole thing, when that expansion team came. We were like, hey, hockey can't happen in Vegas. I think the thing, I don't know if they'll go and win one. Obviously, a lot can happen between now and 2028, but then once they go to Vegas, they'll be interesting to see if they get any better at all because, man,
they can't get any worse.
On paper, they don't have to.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, you're going to a tourist town. You're going to get people to fill the stadium more than you're doing now.
Yeah, especially.
Which isn't saying a lot at all. But, I mean, like you said, I feel like we're watching rock bottom happen. I mean, criminy, they're off to a 1-7 start already.
Bad.
They're not good. They're again, terrible. And they get saddled with a – who the heck are they playing this weekend?
Tigers. Well, they had a game against the Tigers. They had the Tigers today. Let's see if that's the weekend. That is the weekend series, and that's in Detroit.
Yeah, so Detroit somehow 6-1. That's a surprise to me off the jump. But, yeah, Oakland is – if they get through all of this, and they will, when they get through all this with some semblance of fan base left, which, you know, it's pro sports, so they'll have some. But, boy, going to Sacramento for 2-3 years, 2 years, I guess it would be, I don't know that really helps the cause. But they're terrible right now. I mean, they're 1-7. They lost their last four. They have a minus 30 run differential. Their expected win-loss is actually right where it's at. And they've only played one road game so far.
Yeah.
Man, they're bad.
The A's
have
so far.
And they're not even the worst team.
No.
They're still not even the worst team.
And that's the fun part.
49 runs, and they're not even the worst team. I don't even understand how that's possible.
I'll tell you how it's possible. I'll tell you right now. Because Florida was a fluke. And Florida is now feeling every bit of that. They're giving up 59 runs so far on the year.
Well,
and they're 0-8. The Marlins, Jazz Chisholm, Sandy Alcantara can't get it done.
and we talk about, and this is another fun one down there in that NL East, the Mets finally won.
Yeah.
Going into yesterday, there were two teams in the NL East that hadn't won jack diddly or squat. The Marlins are awful.
Hold on, I got one for that. Yeah, I pressed the right button.
All right, the button's working. Getting that one going. 59 runs.
Oh, my gosh. In eight games, dude.
I'm looking up and down the AL because I'm biased. I'll acknowledge that.
We already know. 49
is the worst, and that is Oakland. The NL, apparently the Padres have already somehow given up 54 runs.
The Rockies have given up 58.
Oh, man. Yikes. Oh. 1-6. Holy cats. They're bad, too. And then you look at that beautiful NL Central that we normally like to make fun of, because normally some team, after everybody looks at each other and goes, I don't want to win it. 6-1 Pirates, which they're going to lose to Baltimore.
6-2, it's already on the record book.
Okay, my record hasn't been updated. 4-1 Brewers. The Cubs are off to a 5-2 start. They haven't lost at home yet.
You did
the
right.
Reds. In the opening series, looked really good. They're 4-2. The Cardinals, who were awful last year, granted they played the Marlins, so that does help your cause quite a bit, are 500. So there are spots where teams can win it. Everybody in that division has a plus differential or even in the case of the Cardinals. But, I mean, the run differential is so interesting. So you have 5 games played for the Brewers, 24-17 against. You have 7 for the Cubs. They've scored 49 but given up 37. And all these guys are in plus, but that NL East plus-minus right now, I mean, it's 6 games in. So,
of course,
they're skewed by a lot, but, oh, my, that division looks bad.
When you've got there's only one team in a positive plus run differential, and that's Atlanta.
And the only team that's won more than half their games so far.
Yeah, and they're sitting at a 21 run differential, and then you go down to the Phillies. They're at negative 14, negative 11 for the Nats, who aren't the worst team in the NL East at the moment, which there's time to change that, but I don't know how you're going to change that drastically. The Mets are 13 on a minus run differential, and then you go down to the Marlins on a minus 30. And this is after you had Luis Arraez go absolutely off for batting last year when he was hitting literally 360 on the entire season. You had a bullpen that was doing well. Like, the Marlins were a playoff contender last year, and now you totally just shit the bed. I mean, it's – and I'm not saying, like, just on a baseball – like, this would be poor to watch as a Marlins fan considering how good they were last year, or at least decent they were last year.
It is – amazing. 0-8. You think about the hole you're going to have to crawl out of now. It's early. It's only 8 games, but I'm more amazed that you somehow figured out how to lose 8 of them in a row. You look at their games so far, the Pirates clobbered the shit out of them. I mean, look at the first game with a 6-5, then 7-2, 9-3, 9-7. And I think that 9-7, looking at it now, was another extra inning game that the Pirates were able to get the win in. And then the Angels took care of business, 10-2. And that's saying something by itself right there. When you get mauled by the Angels, you give up 20 runs while scoring 7 if you're the Marlins. And then the Cardinals. We talked about the Cardinals. You're painfully – well, not painfully, I shouldn't say. But you're aware this is a team that's – last year wasn't good. This year, they just about lost to the Marlins at home. It's 5-3 going to the 7th before the Cardinals go off for 5 runs. I mean, holy moly. It's so bad right now for the Marlins. It's amazing.
To make matters worse, here's the schedule for Miami, coming down after this Cardinals series. The Yankees for 3 in the Bronx, Atlanta at home, San Francisco at home, and then they got to go to Wrigley for 4 games before facing the Braves again to round out April. April for the Marlins is brutal. If
you've
the Marlins win a game, through this.
That's like, what I was about to say, yeah.
Could this be one of the first teams? What is the worst start in MLB history for a team? I'm going to look this up.
I mean, you look at that slate. I mean, you just – you're not going to go winless. Like, they're going to figure out a way to beat the Cardinals this weekend. Like, I have no doubt that they'll get one. Hell, maybe they'll get two. But, my, going to the Bronx, then I think you said it was Atlanta right after that. Those are two tough places to play. The Cubs normally isn't a team you think, oh, my God, we got to play the Cubs. But, I mean, if you're coming into the Cubs series with a two wins in your first, you know.
They'll make you pay.
15, whatever. And the Cubs play fairly decent down the stretch. They might have 10 wins by the time they get to that Marlins series. But, boy, and you go into that series, the Marlins are going to be downtrodden somehow 3, 4, 5 series, whatever that be, end of the year. Pro teams jump on that, man.
Oh, it's
normally
bad.
You don't see a team play down to that. And, I mean, like we've talked about, the Cubs have been solid. The Cubs have looked solid, but
hitting-wise especially. I mean, holy cow, we'll get to it.
Of course, we're neglecting the NL West because the exact thing you think is going to be happening is happening. 7-3 Dodgers lead the division already by 1.5 games. There you go. That's a summary of the NL West. Diamondbacks are about 500. Padres are about 500. And the other two off to terrible starts and 4-game skids. But I don't think the Pirates is sustainable. I think this is the exact conversation we had last year. I think the Pirates got off to a good month of April last year, I'm pretty sure.
Mid-April, early May, where they were starting to heat up. Something about that.
Yeah, I don't buy the Pirates. The team I do, however, buy, the Cincinnati Reds. It's early, but, you know, they've got that talented group. And if it's anything like last year, there's going to be several division games that are going to be winnable games. But, man, they look good in their opening series. And I don't know, that's the team I'd watch out for. I mean, the Cubs obviously off to a 5-game winning streak. I mean, that's unmatched in the NL to this point right now. And it's going to be interesting in the early going. But, yeah, somehow Oakland's not the worst team. A team that the Blue Jays got saddled with that was playing like dog water coming in. Houston looked horrible. And then Toronto comes to town. Then for those that are like, huh, that's probably a good thing, right?
No.
It never is.
No. Nope.
It never is. It doesn't. I don't give a shit how bad Houston is. The Blue Jays going to Houston just almost never goes well. Well, the Blue Jays get no hit in the opener because, of course they did. Why wouldn't they? George Springer draws 2 walks. That's it. There's one game.
On a guy, they got no hit from a pitcher who has only had eight starts in his career in the majors. You got no hit by a pretty much rookie.
Yep. We're not even done yet either. This is one game. The sounding like I haven't hit puberty yeps have come out, and we're talking about one game.
I've had fun with this button now. It's Friday. Let's run it.
all right. So you get, demoralized by a guy that's thrown 8 games in his entire career at the pro level. And then you turn around the next day, and it's 1-0 in the 9th, and you're going, oh, geez, here we go again. Not so fast. Davis Snyder, baby. Bang. 2-1. You steal one. Then you roll into game 3 and you're like, okay, I didn't know that the first one was luck. The second one, we really bounced back. It's a good team effort. Oh, big psych. How about a one-hitter? How about that? 2 games, you get beat 18-0 in 2 of the 3 games and have one hit. One. A singular hit. So you look at that and you go, holy cats, you go into the Bronx today. You say Kikuchi pitches well. Trevor Richards throws a hell of a middle inning. Cabrera, who comes back from a suspension, I failed to mention that to start this off for the Blue Jays here, but Cabrera throws solid. Chad Green closes it down. The Blue Jays shut out the Yankees in the Bronx 3-0. The Angels and the Rangers right now lead the AL West. AL Central has two teams that are good for now. The Detroit Tigers and the Cleveland Guardians. Cleveland goes to Minnesota this weekend. Guardians haven't played a home game either. An impressive stat line off that 6-2 start. They've already scored 50 runs, which absolutely stomps the rest of the division.
Yeah, no kidding.
Which, again, surprises nobody. Because, you know, the AL Central is not known for its good teams. Minnesota's 500. And then you go out to the AL East, and you know what? I don't like anybody in the AL East. I really don't like Tampa. But today reminded me of how much I despise the New York Yankees. You know, I don't know how much you watch AL East baseball, but you know, you ever turn on the MLB.TV app and you're seeing Blue Jays, Yankees, and you turn it on and you see that those three little letters pop up in the upper right-hand corner of your screen, Y-E-S. And then you immediately go, hell nah! And then you flip it over to Sportsnet, because who the hell wants to listen to the Yankees Entertainment and Sportsnet or whatever the hell it is. Yeah, I was reminded today of how I do not like the New York Yankees. But the Blue Jays are 500. They got a nice win today. They got thumped by Houston. They split down in St. Pete. You'll take that as an opening series. We're also reminded how Tampa fans absolutely don't show up, even for opening day. I mean,
which is sad to say.
It was a little disappointing. I mean, you have the polar opposite. So I don't know if you saw the picture, but of downtown Cincinnati, Ohio, Baseball USA, baby. They've had baseball for a bazillion years there. And the streets are so packed you can barely walk through them. And then you look at the crowd shot of Tropicana Field down in St. Petersburg, Florida, and you're like, what is this, a spring training game?
Yeah, it's like, dude, you guys got to get in there. I mean, hell, you look at opening game, Wrigley Field for the opening game the other day when it was the home series for the first game, packed house, full packed. I mean, you couldn't find an empty seat on the screen. I mean, there was everybody there. Cincinnati was huge. They even had a freaking opening day parade. I mean,
it's a huge deal.
How do you not want to go? No.
You're not bad.
This is a team that has consistently been in a playoff hunt for the last 6-7 years.
And you're welcoming a team to town in the Toronto Blue Jays
that historically
plays horribly in your building. Now, yeah. I don't know about you, but if I was in the area where my team resided and a team that was coming to town that played us awful, and I'd be like, sign me the hell up yesterday.
Yeah, free.
What's better than, you know, and there's no guarantee you're going to win, but what's better than going to opening day and being like, yeah, we're probably going to smack these guys around. We're going to start feeling good about ourselves one game into the year. Nothing. Nothing better than that.
Might as well get a good start to the year, especially if you're going to win. You got a good chance of winning potentially a whole series or at least the first game that you go to. Shit, sign me up. I get beer, dogs, baseball. Dunzo, buddy. Dunzo.
Blue Jays take the opener, lose the middle two, and then get the bookends there. But, man, I don't know. I think I've apparently this podcast likes baseball more than like 97% of people
the
do.
The entire country.
Because I look at that and I go, if I'm a Tampa fan, I'm like, I'm a little disappointed, to be honest with you. I mean, like, if you're not in the area and you couldn't go and you're looking at your crowd, you're like, what the hell is that? But anyway, I feel like we talk about that every year at some point in the first month of Tampa's attendance is not there. But both teams, the Blue Jays and Cubs more so than the Blue Jays, if we're all being honest here, off to a pretty good start.
Cubs are hot, man.
And,
It was
5 wins. That'll do that for you.
It was kind of a tough one because I watched opening day against the Rangers, and to lose that one when the Cubs were up, gave back a game-tying home run, made it 3-3, and then Christopher Morel in extras pretty much about broke this game wide open, missed a grand slam by about, 4 feet down the foul line in left field, and then all of a sudden Rangers came back on Jonah Himes. And this, I will say this, watching the replay, if you guys hadn't seen it, there was a pass ball that was called that got the run ahead for the Cubs, and that got it to 3-2. And then they came back, game-tying solo shot. But Jonah Heim had an arguable case of where the ball hit the bat and it went foul, but they called it a wild pitch. Number one, if you're going to argue that much and the ump says, no, it is not what you want the call to be, you need to go get that ball because Madrigal was running the entire base path that whole time and got there safely, and the Rangers about gave up 2 runs on the play. Thank God Jonah Heim for them came back with a big base knock to break that up and give the Rangers a win. Game 2 was 11-2. Didn't get to watch that. Nothing too exciting there going on for the Cubs. Then here's where the Cubby magic starts. 9-5 win to close out the series. Then you come to the Rockies, who we've talked about, not the greatest. 5-0, 12-2, 9-8.
But right now, threatening to walk off the Tampa Bay Rays.
Oh, let's go.
Not to interject there, but bases loaded, bottom nine, nobody out for the Colorado Rockies, looking for their second win of the season in a 7-6 ball game out in Colorado.
That'd be huge for the Rockies.
That'd be huge for Tampa Bay losing, because we love to see that just on.
We do.
I don't really care, unless it's the Yankees, I guess. Yeah,
I would still. I would rather see the Yankees lose there.
You know what we should do is we should make, you know, unless we're going to throw it back to what was popular a while ago, make a tier list
of teams we despise.
What, like, teams we tolerate, teams we like. I mean, our team's obviously going to be the top one on the list that no one's going to come close to. But RC and I did this for hockey. Which I guess, unless you've got something else, is a good enough jumping off point for baseball, because we'll tell you if the Rockies walk it off or choke.
I was going to break down I had pulled up here the worst record starts in MLB history.
Oh, God. Here we go.
So,
now we're talking.
If we're going to talk about the lovable losers here for a second, this is as of the first starting 25 games. We'll round out the top five here. So there's 1, 2, 3.
Well, I feel like there's a special Baltimore team that's got to be on that list somewhere. Because didn't they start out like 0-17 or something?
Uh-uh. They're not on this list.
Huh. All right. Well, the more you know.
Well, hold on. The Marlins have been on this list before. They started out the year 5-20. That was back in 1995.
Oh my God. 5-20. Oh, that's painful.
The Marlins have been on this list again in 2013, started 13-37.
Whoa, wow, the Marlins kind of suck.
The Royals in back-to-back years, 2005 and 6, 13-37. But we'll get to the top five here. So as of this record, according to the Reds back in 2018, and we'll throw the Royals into this because both were in the same year, both started a whopping 5-20. The A's in 2023, so last season, 5-20. The Tigers in 2003, completely switching it up this season from the narrative, 3-22 in the first 25 games, finished the series 43-19. And to top it all off, the worst record in the first 25 games, according to MLB.com, and the worst start in history, the Cincinnati Reds, 3-22, tied with the Tigers in 2022. They finished 62-120. Wow.
That is a remarkable
record.
That's abysmal. 62-120 after a 3-22 start.
Wow.
So you put 3-22 to 1. I'm trying to do some quick math here.
They started out
so you on pace for like 160. They only play 160. I'm used to hockey with 82. Boy, they're on pace for terrible.
It's bad. The quick math has been dealt out. So, yeah, there you go.
22? Oh, my God. The real question is, all right, so which one of our lovable loser teams on this edition of Who's Gonna Break the Record of 3-22, our fine contestants include the 0-8 Miami Marlins, the 1-7 Oakland Athletics, the 1-5 Chicago White Sox, the 1-5 New York Mets, or the no longer one win Rockies,
who
got it done with a, wait for it, walk-off grand slam.
Whoa! Who hit it?
I'm looking that up right now. That is incredible.
Walk-off granny, baby.
7-6 turns into 10-6. All right, where's my scoring summary here? We got to go. Ryan McMahon. Grand slam. Jake Cave. Nolan Jones, Brendan Rodgers scores as Colorado picks up the win.
Let's go.
And they had one error in the game. They hit three bombs in the game, and they take the opener away. So I won't put Colorado on that list of lovable losers because
they got two wins. But they did better.
So of the four teams there, the Marlins, Mets, White Sox and Athletics. I mean, obvious choice is the Marlins, but I mean, you gotta put Oakland. Oakland's getting there, man. So you need to go 3-22 or worse to tie the record. So the Marlins need to go 3, and they got a long ways to go, obviously, but 3-15.
I kind of want to put the White Sox on that potential watch list, because you got a four full game.
Well, they're at Kansas City, man.
Yeah, but still, Kansas City's playing a little bit better
this
year.
Awful. They're not good either.
They're not good, but I mean, the White Sox are a whopping 1-5.
I guess they have a plus differential, and yeah, okay, I guess they're mid.
But they've got a four game series, and this is at Kauffman. Then you got the Guardians coming up on the road. Then you're at home versus the Reds. Then you got the Royals and the Phillies. The White Sox, I'm adding to that list of potential. You guys are putting in the hot seat there for the worst record in 25 games.
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting. Oh, I think the Mets.
It doesn't get any better. Then it goes, well, I mean, it could get decent, but then it goes Minnesota, Tampa, Minnesota, St. Louis. Good Lord. Well, woof.
Depends if you believe in the Minnesota Twins or not.
Well, that is very valid. There you have it, folks.
There you go.
Baseball.
Bad,
full swing.
Bad baseball teams, man.
We love baseball. We're doing a baseball dance right now. It's fun. We're having fun. It's Friday. We're drinking beer. It's after 5 o'clock. So let's go somewhere. Where are we going next, JC?
All right. So I was talking about it. We'll just jump into the NHL. Because, I mean,
always.
This is depressing for me. I mean, enthusiastic for you. It would have been different had the Devils looked like they wanted to get there and they gave me a little hope, which I don't say this lightly, but thankfully they never did, because I don't think they would have had they got themselves too big of a hole.
I think if they would have gave you hope, that would have made this so much worse for you coming down the stretch, because at one point you had a smidge. And you were even saying that you were diminishing that smidge because you knew what was going to happen, which, good on you, son.
We
appreciate that, but
that was probably there was a point about a month and a half ago, and I don't remember which podcast you're talking about, which episode, but there was a point like a month and three quarters ago where there was like a window of like, okay, here's how you have to run it. And you have to, like, string together wins and everybody has to lose. Well, part of that happened. Nobody wants the second wild card spot. You just play like crap against Ottawa. You play like crap against Pittsburgh. You play like crap against Buffalo. It's the same thing it's been all year. You get yourself 2 steps forward, 8 steps back. And once again, if you look at the points they've given up this year to teams that are terrible that they shouldn't lose to, I mean, you look at the points. They've given points to Columbus, who's bad, Montreal, who's bad, Ottawa, who's bad, Pittsburgh, who's points-wise, I suppose, since they're 2 points out of the playoffs, are quote-unquote not bad, but they're not good. Buffalo, who isn't good. Then you go to the more insult to injury for me. San Jose, you gave points to. Anaheim, you gave points to. Arizona, you got your ass kicked twice by. Those are bottom-tier teams, and I know I'm going to hear the same, this is every night's a tough team. I understand that. But there are games in the part and throughout your season you should win. I'm not saying you sweep any of these teams, but you can't get smacked around by Anaheim. You can't lose to the Sharks and give up 6 goals in the game. And you sure as hell can't go down to the desert and get swept by Arizona. And yet here we are. So the Devils, as you can tell by this conversation, are not officially eliminated. Of course, the mathematics are still there because you have 4 teams now vying for that last wild card spot in the East because nobody wants it. The Islanders are at 83 points, and notably, not only that, the bottom team in the third team in the Metro is still open because Philly and New York have the same amount of points at 83. And then right behind the Islanders, Capitals 82, Detroit 82, and somehow, some way, Pittsburgh Penguins are on the doorstep of the playoffs. Washington sucks. It's incredible. Every time I hear anybody talk about the Washington Capitals, they have a minus 38 goal differential. Teams that are worse than minus 38. There are 2 teams worse in the East, Canadians and Blue Jackets. And let me have you guess where those 2 teams sit right now. Montreal Canadiens and the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Dead last.
Dead last!
Dead last in their divisions.
The Columbus Blue Jackets are terrible. They're dead last, and Montreal's right there in front of them. Okay, so minus 38. Well, let's flash over to the West, shall we? Teams that have a worse goal differential, Anaheim, Chicago, and San Jose.
Holy shit.
Well,
let's see,
Mr. Contestant Man.
Oh,
where
my.
Do you think those 3 teams are?
Pardon my French, folks, but dead fucking last. Holy
dead
shit.
Fucking last. And San Jose is even
134.
Worse. 134.
What?
134.
Bro!
You know this year? 166. Their goal minus is almost as many goals as they've scored all year. That's
what?
How bad this team is. But so you look at that minus, 38 for the Caps, and they're a point out of the playoffs. They're a point out of being third in the Metro. They could very seriously be playing the Carolina Hurricanes in the first round of the playoffs as the third team in the Metro. And they have a minus 38. That's incredible.
I'm baffled. Then you go to the Blackhawks, and that's almost close to worse, and there's still time for the Blackhawks to have worse because they're at 96 on the negative for the differential.
They are unbelievably bad.
And this is coming from a Blackhawks team that just recently won a Stanley Cup. Like,
yeah.
What the hell? Goodness. I mean, that's bad. That's bad hockey right there. Bad stick and puck with the boys. Holy.
So
wow.
We look at what the playoff situation is for the teams that are actually relevant. We'll start with the President's Cup. And I am just, I hate talking about it because 2 of the 3 teams I absolutely loathe. The team that would be the President's Cup frontrunner right now is none other than the New York Rangers with 106 points. They lead the way. Then it's Boston, because of course it is, with 105, and the only hope is the Dallas Stars. Yep, that's where we're at now. Dallas has won 8 in a row, only 1 point out of the President's Cup lead. Yikes. But we look at the playoffs. If they ended right now, we'll start on the West. A little bit of shuffling could possibly happen here, but Dallas leads the Central, Colorado, Winnipeg behind them. I think this is pretty much going to be the set. Maybe flip Winnipeg and Colorado, but I think this is where it's going to be landing. The Pacific is interesting because there could be a jump if Vegas plays well or Edmonton doesn't play well, or the Kings get hot. The Kings could jump Vegas as well. Vancouver's going to win the Pacific. They have 102 points. Edmonton, 95. Vegas, 92. And the Kings, the second wild card at 91. And Nashville is continuing to play hot there in the second wild card. So matchups for the West, there's not really a team that's going to catch them. I mean, everybody wants to pretend St. Louis and Minnesota are close. I mean, I'm just going to say it. Barring a collapse of collapses from somebody, it ain't happened. You need to make up 7 points in 6 games. Probably not happening. So the matchups in the West, Colorado, Winnipeg, Edmonton, Vegas, that may be, that's fireworks right there, man. Edmonton, all offseason, all they talked about was,
we want Vegas.
Vegas is the chip on the shoulder. They want Vegas, and, well, there's still time. I'm not going to say they're going to get them yet, but they have a good shot to get Vegas in the first round. The Kings would turn around and play Dallas. Nashville would get Vancouver. And first take on those matchups, Vancouver, Nashville would be an upset special if it happened that I could really see happening as well as Nashville's been playing. I mean, Nashville probably isn't going to catch Winnipeg. They need 6 points to make up 6 points in 6 games. But I don't know, man. The way Nashville's played, they got hot. They've cooled off a little bit. Because the one thing I kind of thought they might have going against them is they might be getting too hot too soon and then fizzle out before the playoffs. But right now, they kind of settled in. They've won 7 of their last 10. Kings Stars would be interesting. Colorado, Winnipeg would be interesting. But, I mean, the showdown, everybody's going to be watching. Maybe across both conferences, Vegas, Edmonton. Man, if those two play, and if Edmonton hosts Game 7, it really doesn't get much better than that. You look over on the east side, Boston, Florida, Toronto, top 3, and the Atlantic. Rangers, Flyers, Hurricanes for now, or Hurricanes, Flyers for now. That probably will change for Metro. Wild card teams, we only know one that is a sturdy boy that may catch up. And we may get that Florida-Tampa matchup. Toronto's 95. Tampa Bay, all of a sudden, has won 2 in a row. They've gotten points in 9 of their last 10. Only 2 points behind Toronto and just beat Toronto as well. They're going to be a feisty team no matter where you put them. And then we talked about it. 4 teams vying for the last spot. Detroit, Pittsburgh, Washington, and New York all vying. But if you go with what we have right now, the matchups would be Florida-Toronto, Carolina-Philadelphia, New York Rangers, New York Islanders, and Tampa Bay-Boston. Tell you what, that Tampa-Boston would be interesting. The New York-New York would be interesting, but the other two I think are going to be snoozers. Because it's the same thing. The Maple Leafs are the Dallas Cowboys of hockey. Because the same thing we were hearing last year is how Toronto's good. They're real good. Auston Matthews is good. This team's good. We're going to make the playoffs. We're going to go win the whole thing.
Not a chance.
They're going to get saddled with Florida. And unless Florida just falls apart.
They're looking like it now. Holy shit.
Well.
3-6 and 1 in the, well, 3 and should be 7 in their last 10. Yeah, no.
They've got 101 points. They'll be fine.
But I appreciate the optimism.
I think the one I really want to see Tampa, Florida for the first round. I think Tampa Bay's got enough juice to get there, and then Florida does have a matchup they should be worried about, because
yeah.
I don't really care who Tampa plays. As much as I don't like the Lightning, I feel like they're gonna be pretty tough, man. If the Rangers get the Lightning, Rangers, I think, will be done. Rangers-Islanders is just going to be amusing because, you know, for those hockey fans that
– It's a New York battle. Saw it's literally across the street.
Throwdown on, I think it was Wednesday night.
Oh, between the –
It was Wednesday night, fight night in Madison Square Garden, and Rempe got his ass kicked by McDermott.
Wasn't that the Devils Curtis and the Rangers?
Oh, it sure was.
In the first puck drop.
Flashbacks of 2012, baby. 2 seconds. All five players throwing
just
it down.
Brawling.
Eight players ejected off the first jump. Later in the game, there'd be a misconduct against them. Mercer, who would be just a 10. But
God.
Yeah.
You got
I feel like Islanders, Rangers. Whew.
Bro, could you?
Especially. The biggest question about the Rangers I have is, okay, this Rempe stuff is cute, funny, whatever the hell. He's a goon. Let's just call him what he is. He doesn't do anything other than fight and get thrown out of games. He's been, and especially in the Devil series, I mean, Jesus, he's been ejected all three times. He's headhunted twice in the series. I don't know how you can play him in the playoffs. I seriously, unless you just send him out there to target the best player of the opposing team and then just play without him the rest of the time. I don't know what he does. I don't know what you're banking on him to do, because this whole Saturday night fight night is great and cute and dandy in the regular season. But in the postseason, you're playing too good of teams to give them a 5-minute major in the playoffs. You it's not going to work for you. So I'm intrigued. I mean, I'm sure I'm not the only one that thinks. I mean, if I'm the Rangers, you probably weigh either playing him sparingly or playing him not at all, because it's a momentum killer. I mean, I don't even care if you win the fight, but if you get a misconduct and you're sauced and tossed, or you get a penalty that's a 5-minute major. That's not something that's sustainable for the playoffs. I mean, it's just not. I mean, Shesterkin is good, sure, but he's not elite to where you're going to be, you know. It's not like you have a Vasilevsky or a Bobrovsky in net that's going to – or a Hellebuck in net that's going to just bail you out every time. I mean, you saw it in the Devils game on Wednesday. It's just, you can beat Shesterkin. I mean, the Devils lost 4-3 down the stretch, but you're talking about better teams than the Devils in the playoffs. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Rempe. I know Rangers fans love him. I think the league is torn. I can tell you, obviously biased as a Devils fan, the whole thing seems like you want to make yourself a villain before the playoffs, and it's a little weird that – this is how you – I mean, you got Trouba. Trouba already does this and does it in a way where sometimes it's called a penalty and sometimes it's not. I don't know. The whole Rempe thing just is weird to me. But we'll see. And then they got the quote from last year with Shesterkin when asked about the Devils game, the first time they played. Well, if they – did they win the cup, then last playoffs didn't matter. And so, you know, that quote's going to be revisited at some point, because the Rangers have, like, one of the elite goalies of all time in Henrik Lundqvist, who never won a title. So, you know, there's that. But anyway, I digress on that. But it's going to be an interesting run to the playoffs on the East and a couple on the West. But I was talking about it earlier. We put together a hierarchy, if you will.
Okay.
Artsy and I did, and I've got to figure out where to track his down at, because ours are way different. It turns out I don't like a lot of teams in the East.
Weird.
So
weird.
Yeah, okay.
Mr. Devils fan over here.
Here's some of RC's. We'll go through the highlights of teams that he likes and don't like, okay? So, obviously, S-tier is Vegas. And S-tier is the team that you follow. A-tier, and these A-tier teams are amazing. I don't even know what to say. Buffalo and Columbus. These are teams you like and teams that are fun to watch. Those are your two A-tier teams. Your B-tier teams, the Bruins, Toronto, the Rangers, and the Devils. Okay?
Okay.
And we'll just do the teams he doesn't like, because then the rest are teams that C-tier, no one gives, he just doesn't give a shit about. Teams he doesn't like, and anybody that knows him, these five make perfect sense. Oilers, Panthers, Sharks, Kings, and Minnesota Wild.
Glad the Panthers don't offend him.
Well, the Panthers are in the D tier, so the Panthers and, well, I mean, of course they do. Panthers fans, Vegas fans feel the same way about each other, except Florida's flexes, they won in the regular season, and Vegas fans are like, oh, yeah, how'd that Stanley Cup last year work out for you?
Valid.
Yeah. So that's RC. So remember that. Five teams that he doesn't like, six that are A or B tier, and then the rest are don't care. Then I decided, oh, that's pretty fun. Well, let me put together one of these.
Here we go.
And I got to find it now as I scroll back and forth. All right, here we go. So the S tier, of course, the New Jersey Devils. The A tier, Predators, Jets, Sharks, Canadiens, Flames, and Vegas. B tier, Canucks, Blues, Dallas. And then grab the oxygen tank for teams I don't like, because there is a lot of them. And these are all, you know, this varies. This isn't in the order that I hate them, as in, like, most hated to least hated. But teams I, you know, I don't really care for. There are 11 of them.
Oh,
there are more teams I don't like than teams that are in the C, don't give a shit category. Teams on this list include the Bruins, Avalanche, Hurricanes, Panthers are one of those, like, C or D, it depends. Like, if the Panthers are playing the Devils, not big on them. Otherwise, it's what it is. But Panthers on this particular tier list are D tier. Philadelphia, Edmonton, Tampa, Ottawa, Washington, New York Rangers, and Minnesota Wild. Grab an oxygen tank, because there you go. So in conclusion, the Devils obviously are S tier. There were 9 teams between A and B tier, 11 teams in D tier, and another 10 that are mid that are whatever, who cares.
So
let's should put one of those together for baseball, because I think that would be fun. And I would have another long list of teams in baseball I don't like either.
So out of all those teams that you listed, out of the 11, who's the number one on the list of teams that you just cannot absolutely stand?
Oh, that's the top three is so easy. I mean, number one's the Rangers. I mean, come on.
Go figure.
And then number two is Boston, because, of course.
Boston.
I mean, number three is kind of a tie, depends on the day, but Philadelphia or Carolina. I right now it would go Rangers, Boston, Carolina, or Rangers, Boston, Philly, Carolina, Tampa, and then everybody else. And Tampa, and part of Tampa's problem isn't even the Lightning, it's that Tampa Bay as a collection of teams. It's kind of like the whole Boston thing. Like, I don't like any of the Patriots, the Celtics, the Bruins, the Red Sox. Hate them all.
It's just, if you're a Tampa Bay team, JC's out. You're done.
And the Tampa Bay team's the same. I don't like the Rays. That's been well documented. And we never, as the, all my teams go down to Tampa and play like shit. That's part of it, too. I mean, the Devils don't ever play well down in Florida, down in Tampa. They go to the other Florida team. They play fine, usually. But the Tampa Bay Rays and Lightning, both of my teams never play well. So those would be my top five. Again, in descending order of most hated to least hated, Rangers, Bruins, the Flyers, Carolina, and Tampa.
Solid.
So there you go. That's my super ultra professional tier list with plenty of commentary with it, because I feel like baseball, and I mean, I was looking at the divisions of baseball and how this would play out, and I feel like baseball, there is not a team in the East
that you enjoy.
Or in the AL, I should say. Well, AL East is awful, like awful, awful. But like, I was looking at teams in the AL that I would be like, okay, whatever. Cross out the East, dash that. Then you go out to the West. Rangers and Houston right off the jump is a big fat no.
Yep.
Mariners are dodgy. Angels, normally I don't care because they're normally not that good. And Athletics, I mean, how can you hate something that can't even get out of its own way? And then you go to the Central, and I feel like the entire Central Division would be that C tier of teams. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
I mean,
they just kind of run a little
bit.
So
there is literally no team in the East that I would be like, yeah, I like that team. And that's kind of what happened here. I mean, outside of Montreal for the hockey list, but that's kind of what happened here. I mean, sure, there's teams in the NL that are fine, like the Reds, I don't mind. I don't know, baseball. Actually, I'm looking at this, and baseball might actually be worse for teams that aren't just like, I don't give a shit what happens there. Like, I'm looking at like the Diamondbacks and Reds are like the two that are like, okay. I mean, my mom's a Cardinals fan, and you're a Cubs fan, so I mean, like half of the NL Central's like, okay, they're fine.
I have my. Like, I'm looking and making my list right now.
For hockey or baseball?
For baseball.
Yeah, I'm just spitballing at the moment. I'm not going to put together a tier list at the moment. Maybe I will, and I'll send it off to you later to put on social. But I mean, Pittsburgh, who cares? Milwaukee, who cares?
Ugh.
The Mets. I mean, they're funny for the meme, so I don't really know what that means for a tier list of teams I like. I mean, if they weren't a joke, I probably wouldn't care. So I feel like they're not particularly high on the list. Colorado, I think, would be cool just because of the stadium. So I guess count them as somebody that's okay. But, yeah, it's going to be not a lot in any sport that are just like, they're fine. He is a hard working man.
I'm looking just at this list, and when I make it, I've got my teams. So
you should have done an NHL one first. Well, although I don't think you probably follow the NHL close enough to probably have an opinion one way or the other. Outside of you're probably not big on Vegas, and
Vegas and Boston probably round out my top two teams.
Bruins and Tampa, you probably don't like either, I suppose. But so Vegas and Boston, that's
all right. Well, Vegas mostly because, one, obviously, last year, duh.
You got stomped in the cup.
Yeah, I want revenge. Two, my buddy Kenny, everybody knows Dr. Jack, he is a big Vegas fan, and he didn't really get into hockey until Vegas became a thing, and then it just became all Vegas from there. And I was like, all right, here we go. So he kind of ruined the nights for me. Boston, just because I know
You literally have to say nothing, and half of the audience is like, yep.
Boston.
That's enough for me.
Otherwise from that, I just need to watch more hockey and figure out, because I can't really kind of debate on which teams I don't, because like the Devils, I mean, I can't say anything bad about the Devils. I can't really say anything bad about anybody. I have not watched enough hockey to really say I hate this team.
He hasn't watched enough hockey. So while you continue putting together your baseball tier list, I did want to run through the race between Edmonton and Vegas. Down the stretch, here's who both teams play. Again, Vegas 3 points back with 7 to go. Vegas has Coyotes, Canucks, Oilers on the road, and then a 4-game homestand, which down the stretch, that 4-game homestand may be more beneficial than anybody thought at the beginning of the year. Wild, Avalanche, Blackhawks, and Ducks. 3 of the 4, very winnable. I mean, they thumped Colorado the last time they played them. So there's that. Edmonton is down to 8 games where they'll be hosting Colorado today after getting absolutely destroyed by Dallas on Wednesday. Then they're at the Flames, and then they go on a four-game homestand as well. Vegas, Coyotes, Canucks, and Sharks before going on the road against the Coyotes and the Avalanche. I think looking at it, Edmonton's schedule tougher, but they have that extra game built in. It should be a good run between the two teams if they keep playing well and make it fascinating down the stretch of the season.
Well, there you go.
So with that, the Devils and their schedule left. They got Ottawa Saturday, Sunday the Preds, Tuesday Toronto, Thursday Toronto, Saturday Philadelphia, and wrap up the season Monday the 15th when they play host to the Islanders. Maybe playing some spoiler by that part of the season. We'll see. That's the last two games, the Flyers and the Islanders. That's about the only thing you're going to be hoping for there. Because unfortunately, barring a ripping through these last six teams, probably not enough time left in the season to make a playoff run, but there you go. Let's look at that as matchup set. Buffalo lead Philly at the moment. Rangers lead Detroit because Detroit's not that good. And Washington is somehow shutting out Carolina. Now, make hockey make sense with that one. On the road at Carolina, Washington is leading. They might just fumble their way in, man. I don't even know what to say anymore. I mean, it's one of those things where every stat, every nugget you learn about the team, you're like, there's no way these guys should be even close to the playoffs. Well, nonetheless, there they are.
They're sniffing.
And hopefully they don't get it, but I guess we'll have to wait and see. So
they're trying to knock on the door.
There you go. While you continue to look at the old,
I've moved on from that. We'll wait till the next time. I've moved on from that because it's gonna just make me mad looking at some of these teams.
I was gonna say Cardinals. You sound a little cranky at the moment.
I'm cranky because I also just pulled
up
my.
He's looking at the Cardinals like, oh, I wish that team didn't even exist, man.
I also just pulled up my March Madness bracket. Or pulled up the March Madness bracket, and that also just made me want to just run straight through a brick wall. Because
you, buddy.
Well, you can't look at yours anymore. You shredded yours. I get to live with the fact that I'm looking at mine.
Well, you probably have teams that survived past the Elite Eight, though, too.
I lost my title team in my main bracket. North Carolina decided they wanted to lose to frickin' Alabama, which, by the way.
Oh, we boy, can, here we go.
Do we want to?
Let's just jump into the final four discussion here.
Let's just do it. Let's just do
Roll
it.
Roll Tide, baby.
Okay, no, never. That's on my college football list. Bye.
No matter how mad you're about to get, it doesn't matter. You know why? Because UConn's going to bury this team. UConn is going to win the whole thing, and it's probably not going to be close.
Okay.
Because no game at this point has been close. They embarrassed Illinois. A 30-point run? In the come on, holy cow. So you're going to be mad. I'm going to say Roll Tide again because I can tell you're frustrated Alabama's there. But UConn's going to win, but all I've got to say is Roll Tide, baby.
I honestly think the best team in this chance, now that North Carolina is out, which I did see this going either way on North Carolina-Bama, I went through this multiple times trying to fill out this bracket. Because Alabama had, I believe it was last year, they had their Elite Eight run again or their Sweet 16. And then you take a look at who they had to play in this Clemson team, overcoming that, which Clemson as a sixth seed this year was mighty shocking. The Tigers played some good basketball coming down the stretch, except for the ACC tournament where they just, you know, completely choked. But looking at the way they were handling RJ Davis and Baycott down low and just being able to guard the perimeter shooting, that's the biggest thing that Alabama has that UConn right now is going to get stuffed with. Because looking at UConn running through this March Madness, Stetson game one, 91-52. Everybody knew that was coming. They weren't going to be the one seed to lose to a 16. Northwestern, everybody thought, yeah, Northwestern can give them a little bit of a run. Well, 75-58. Then you get to San Diego State, who made a Final Four run last year And everybody said that this Aztec team could be the 5 seed that finds their way in. Nope. UConn decided to shred them up, especially with their shooting. Then you get to a big down-low defensive team in Illinois who made their run through the Big Ten tournament, ends up beating Nebraska, ends up winning the Big Ten tournament, and now you have them sitting in a spot where everybody said, yeah, Illinois can give fits. Nope. So if you're seeing where the narrative is going to possibly negate myself, I'm going to back it up right here. Bama, when it comes to perimeter defense, has been lights out. Shooting the ball, playing offense, scoring. That's what the SEC is best at. They score immensely. The biggest thing that I figured this out from is you look at Texas A&M against Nebraska, how fast this team is able to move the ball. UConn is one of the fastest teams in the tournament. I think Alabama can match up. So in this, I need UConn to win because in one bracket, I'm still alive with UConn being a national title team. But I think Alabama could potentially find their way sniffing the door of the national title game. Now,
I still say UConn buries them.
I hope so, because one, this UConn team is so fun to watch,
Roll Tide, baby.
UConn is so fun to watch, and they're looking to try to go back to back.
How about one more for the road? Roll Tide, baby.
Yeah, I know. I'm choosing to ignore it now. You hop to the other side of the bracket. This is where
Roll Tide, baby.
He's just still going to say it. You hop to the other side of the bracket. My bracket didn't get screwed up until day two, pretty much. I mean, I called the Duquesne win against BYU. I was going rolling, and then day two and three hit me like a ton of bricks, and I just went downhill from there. Obviously, Texas A&M, Houston, that game was a lot closer than everybody thought, especially with this Houston Cougar team. But then you get to Houston versus Duke, and Houston loses one of the top point guards in the country to an injury, leaving in that game at half. It ended up being kind of the little bit of a death blow to Houston, which everybody, to me, this Duke team this year did not look that great, especially playing North Carolina, which is usually a much more competitive series when it comes down in college basketball. Duke was kind of getting ran over the floor. So I was like, all right, Duke's probably going to sniff it. Well, Duke ends up taking the win on that one. And then they get to NC State. Who also, by the way, if you guys are Kentucky fans, I am so sorry for your guys' loss on day one because Oakland comes in and just ruins your guys' dream at a title run. Oh, my gosh. You have a guy shooting 10 threes in a game and making them? They were going for the record for 11, but NC State, to me, is a team right now, the way that they've been playing, especially blown out North Carolina in the ACC title game, they're playing like the good old 1980s team with Jim Valvano when they were seeded as an 8 coming into the NCAA tournament after winning the ACC. Now they're seeded at an 11. They needed the win to get in. And they're going up against the fan favorite of the year, Purdue Boilermakers, who won, to me, not a fan favorite. This team,
about to say that same thing.
Oh,
team feels like the country's divided on it because
you either love or you hate Purdue
I'm gonna let you finish your thought because I feel like ours are probably pretty close to the same here.
This is why you love or hate Purdue, and I think JC's got it. Good old kid by the name of Zach Eddy. Just as soon as he's gone, the old man. It was the same thing with Gonzaga last year. Their big guy leaves, and you're like, all right, Gonzaga's fine now. We're good. But no, Purdue, well, and especially Purdue in the last, 4 or 5 years, they've been seeded as a top 5 seed and cannot get it done. They're pretty much the Cowboys. Oh, yeah, this team is so good. This team is going to come into March. They're going to run it. They've run the Big Ten. They're doing everything in their power. They're going to win this. And they haven't. They've choked. They lost to a 15 seed in St. Peter's last year. Now, this year, I didn't have them going very far. I actually had Utah State upsetting them. They drop 106 on Utah State. Then they get to Gonzaga, and everybody's like, all right, Purdue might be in a little trouble with this Zags team because they're looking red hot, especially after throttling Kansas. Yep, nope, that went down the bed. And then they get to Tennessee, who has played very well in this tournament, especially against a good Creighton team who went hot in the went cold in the second half, especially in the last 6 or 7 minutes. So, yeah, there's my thought on Purdue. Was it similar or not?
Actually, believe it or not, not exactly. So there seems to be this misconception that this is a surprise Purdue is this far. And this, you hit on part of it right there. This team has been a one or a two, like the last like five seasons, four seasons, and they've been top five seed like as long as I can remember going back. This is not a surprise. Newsflash, one seeds and two seeds are supposed to get this far.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeded based on how good everybody thinks you are. Getting upset by 15 seeds and never getting all that deep in the playoffs doesn't mean that in March Madness this year that it's a quote-unquote surprise you're here. You're a one seed. That's the thing that kind of grates me with this team is you can't be they're not saying a Cinderella per se, but you can't be surprised your team got here when they're a one.
I mean,
this is what ones are supposed to do. The whole point of the being a top seed is, you know, you're supposed to have the quote unquote easier road to the Final Four, and then once you get there, you're probably playing a bunch of ones anyway, so it doesn't matter. But that's what grates me with this team is this shouldn't be a surprise.
It shouldn't, but at the same time, you look at, and I will give you the biggest upsetter of all, who got into the tournament based on a let-in in the last four in, who everybody got pissed about. Virginia. You take a Virginia team who, yes, they won a national title within the last 4 years. They're the first number one seed to lose to a 16 ever in the history of the tournament. Virginia cannot score to save their damn lives. They are a defensive team and they're damn good at it. But they cannot score to match teams in this tournament. They can outplay you defensively by all means. They can shoot at the free throw line, that's fine. But they can't score. And Virginia has been the biggest upset, and then it flips over to Purdue. Purdue is the same way. Purdue is a very, very good defensive team. They can get inside. They can get rebounds. They can do all that. Outside, they've got some decent guards, especially this year. But they're the same thing that Virginia does is they just choke. They find a way to let up, and they can't put their foot on the gas. St. Peter's proved that last year, and this year everybody said the same thing. If you were against Purdue, they're going to lose in the second round. They're going to lose in the Sweet 16 if they even get that far. Well, now, here we are on the fact that, like you said, this shouldn't be shocking that a number one seed is here. But for a lot of people around the country, it is because Purdue has been this bad. Now you're looking at a Final Four with UConn as a one, Alabama as a four. That game should probably go according to plan. You look at this game between Purdue and NC State, you're thinking NC State has a shot to be in the title game. They really do. Because their big man down low is the same size as Eddie, and he is damn good. NC State can shoot the ball. They can shut down the post very, very well. They've done it all freaking year. They did it against Armando Bacot and North Carolina in the ACC title game. I have to say, give me the Wolfpack. Give me NC State to be an 11 in the title game. And if Purdue wins this, here's my hot take. If Purdue wins this game and gets to the championship, Purdue does win. Purdue wins a national title.
Oh, man.
It's going to be tough.
UConn-Purdue title game. Both teams have to get there. I mean, there's no slouch at this point. I just think the whole premise of Purdue being a surprise, it just annoys me. But anyway, this all happening Saturday, NC State, Purdue, and Alabama, Roll Tide against UConn. And then the winners will match up for it all. And now we go to
the women's two side. Teams
that are the exact same, fun fact. And we have a heck of a fight going on in one of these games right now. 32-31 halftime. South Carolina, the juggernaut, is only leading by one, and that, I'm just gonna say it, that surprises the hell out of me.
It does.
Iowa gets UConn. Iowa, I think, was like 2.5, 3.5 point favorites. But this game right here, NC State hanging around South Carolina. Has only got 32 at the break. As love to see the way this is playing out. As a lot, we've talked about it before, but women's postseason games can get a little lopsided. NC State gets by Texas. South Carolina pretty much hasn't had any
challenge, really.
Indiana played them well, I guess you could say, but hasn't had that. The other side of the bracket, Iowa and UConn both have had games where you go, I don't know about that. Iowa's second round against West Virginia got real, real interesting.
That was a nail biter.
For a while. And then the UConn led up against Duke in the Sweet 16, and that almost got interesting. Both teams took care of business in the Elite Eight. Iowa getting past last year's champ LSU. Van Lith, I think, has jumped into the transfer portal out of LSU. So we'll see what happens there. And then Angel Reese off of LSU declared for the WNBA draft. Also not a big surprise there. Caitlin Clark and company gets it done there. This one's going to be fun tonight for UConn and Iowa, two of the premier, as in Beckers and Clark, two of the premier players at the moment that everybody talks about. And UConn kind of has gone to the shadows. I say that ish.
Ish is a good way of putting it.
They're not the first team you think of right now. You think of a South Carolina, you think of an Iowa, you think of LSU because of how obnoxious they've been at points. UConn is the sturdy team, man. They do it year in and year out. They're in these positions. They win these types of games. They had that stretch where they just flat out didn't lose.
156 games, to be exact. 156, no.
Which is stupid when you think about 156 games, and now they're one game away from being back to another title. That's going to be fun, and it's going to be even more interesting because, you know, South Carolina's the juggernaut. We talked about it. But if NC State somehow beats South Carolina like Iowa did last year.
Yeah.
South Carolina is going to be one of those teams that is going to be going.
Where do we screw up here?
What could have been conversation. Last year Iowa wasn't supposed to beat them. This year, I mean, I don't think anybody even thought for a second NC State would be in this game. Nonetheless, here they are, and NC State kind of on the men's side too, playing a team that's solid that a lot of people probably don't think they'll beat. It'll be interesting, but the nightcap Iowa-UConn sets up for some fascinating basketball, and the one going on right now does as well for NC State and South Carolina. So there you go. That's a look at both Final Fours. By the way, I don't think anybody said their picks. I've got Iowa and South Carolina going for the rematch on the women's side, and I've got UConn. I want to say NC State because this whole Purdue thing's annoying, so I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Give me NC State. They'll probably lose, but it doesn't matter because UConn's going to win the whole thing. UConn, NC State, and as much as I can, I want to say NC State on the women's side. I think South Carolina figures it out, and Iowa gets last year's South Carolina win felt like a signature win, but I feel like beating UConn at this stage of the game is another.
That's a signature win in its own.
And I think it's above South Carolina. Not that UConn's a better team per se, but the legacy of UConn, Iowa might get another crack at it, but I'm going to go Iowa, South Carolina, and boy, oh boy, will that be a fun one for the title game.
On the women's side, I'm looking at it. I got South Carolina. And I'm sorry, folks, I can't get behind the bandwagon on this one. I got to go South Carolina and UConn.
Going with the safe pick.
I want the Husky bloodline back, man. It was fun watching those girls play. And then on the men's side, give me NC State, give me UConn. One, it's not a fact against Purdue. I've watched that Survive in Advance so many times back. I believe it was 1983 with Jim Valvano when that NC State team had to go through Jordan. They had to go through Ralph Sampson at Virginia. They had to go through the Running Rebels at UNLV. I mean, they had to go through so much to get there, and they've done that. They've proven that same thing this year. So I got UConn on both sides of the bracket, and then I got NC State on the men's and South Carolina on the women's, setting it up for the titles.
It's so interesting that if the game's played out right, you could have the same two teams playing for the title.
That would be sick, honestly.
We won't have time to do enough research on this, but I want to know the last time that was even possible, because UConn's been there, but I'm trying to think of another team that's had both teams, men's and women's, this deep. Nothing's coming to mind. South Carolina leading NC State 37-32, 8:53 to go third quarter. Don't count out the Wolfpack, but a Nebraska fan not picking Iowa, that's completely and utterly not surprising at all. No matter which one you pick, that's the fun thing about the Iowa-UConn game. No matter which one you pick, there's not really a bad argument for it. You know, normally, I mean, you look at the men's side, you know.
Oh.
Especially the NC State game.
Oh. Interesting development here. We did have time to research this. There is a, and this is according to AZ Central. Let me make sure I'm reading this right. For the first time ever in the history of the Final Fours, this could happen to where UConn and NC State could have teams on both the men's and women's side competing for a national title. First time ever.
So this is the first time that there's been two of the same teams that could play each other in the Final Four. I'm amazed it hasn't happened before, but
there's been 15 schools that have had teams in the NCAA semifinals of men's NCAA tournaments and women's NCAA tournaments. And this would be the first time ever that both schools could make it. So it has happened before where they've had on both sides for men's and women's that they've had the same schools there. 15 to be exact, like you stated.
But they've never been on opposite sides of the bracket where it's possible that they both play each other.
No, it has been, but they've just never had it happen in the tournament.
Okay, but what's the most recent tournament Final Four teams that could have got there but didn't? That's what I'm wondering. I mean,
I am not sure. I'm looking at.
Yeah, I was going to say that would have been an impressive pull right there.
That would have been very impressive. But so here's the last time, though. This is impressive in itself for UConn. So UConn has had both teams in the Final Fours in 2004, 2009, 11, 14, and now 2024. For NC State, this is the first time where both teams have been set in the Final Four in the same year. So we've got some history brewing here, folks. This could be some fun.
And it all starts with NC State pulling off an upset that they're now down 10 in with 6.5 to go third quarter.
Come on, Wolfpack. I just want this now for the history. Come on, Wolfpack. Oh,
so,
boy.
Speaking of history and teams choking or not choking, we move her over to the UFL.
Woo!
Leave it to me to pick a team that lost on some guy that hasn't kicked a field goal since high school, hitting a, wait for it, 64-yard field goal as the Michigan Panthers out of the USFL Conference beat the St. Louis Battlehawks. Battlehawks looked – here's the take, and I'm going to – I don't know if you watched any of the Brahmas game.
I had not gotten a chance to, no.
And it's early, so the teams are still figuring it out, and this may be a hot take. Kind of like the AAF better back in 2018 when I watched. And nobody really did a lot of scoring this week. And that's one of the things I was kind of, you know, obviously there's going to be defensive games. But I was hoping we would see a league where, you know, you had like 35-28, 45-38, you know, got some scoring because it was – the game itself wasn't slow, but it was just one of those games where nothing really got going until the fourth quarter. I mean, the Battlehawks drive to give themselves the lead where they needed a fourth and 10 and fourth and goal to get it done. I mean, that was fun to watch, but it was just, I don't know. It didn't do it for me as much as I was thinking it would. As somebody that hasn't watched a lot of pro football in recent memory, I mean, I watched some highlights here and there, but final scores, Stallions beat the Renegades 27-14. The Panthers walk off of the Battlehawks 18-16. Brahmos thumped the Defenders 27-12, and Showboats beat the Roughnecks 18-12. Two teams score more than 20 points in the first week. The Stallions and the Brahmos both score 27, and the XFL looked awful this weekend as a conference. One singular team winning, and that was the Brahmos. Otherwise, I believe the Brahmos played the Defenders. Otherwise, it was a straight sweep in head-to-head matchups as the Stallions beat the Renegades and the Battlehawks lost to the Panthers. Showboats and Roughnecks are in the same conference as well. So, not a good start for conference-wise for the XFL, but the Brahmos will take it as they were the only ones to win in the opener. Hopefully week two is better. I mean, I don't know. To me, it wasn't the most exciting thing I've ever seen in week one, but there'll be weeks like that. You know, we're still getting warmed up to our teams as well, too. It's not like us with our other teams where you already know what you're expecting going in. So we'll see what happens in week two. Matchups this week. Brahmos are at Memphis to take on the Showboats. Arlington Renegades are in St. Louis to take on the Battlehawks. Stallions are in Detroit to take on the Panthers. And the Roughnecks are in D.C. to take on the Defenders. Any thoughts here on the UFL? I mean, your team tied for the most points in week one. I mean, that's something. And you win your game at home in the Alamo Dome opener.
We got a chance to watch the Brahmos tomorrow because that game is at 11, so we'll stay tuned for that one and see how good they can come back in game two. That's my thoughts on that. Holy and, crap. Nick has to take a quick break. We will be right back. We apologize on the unprofessionalness of this podcast.
All right. Well, I have no context to any of that, so we'll look once again, Panthers and the Stallions, trying to piece together the Panthers and Stallions, both 1-0 out of the UFL conference. They'll go head-to-head Detroit, or rather Michigan, didn't do a lot of scoring. Stallions did, so that'll be an interesting one. Battlehawks look to bounce back against the Renegades, who are also looking to bounce back. Both teams did next to no scoring, with the Battlehawks scoring 16 and the Renegades scoring a 14. Brahmos Showboats could be one of the more interesting games of the day. Both teams won, and they will square off in the matchup Saturday. And then the Roughnecks and Defenders both looking to try to get wins and both trying to get points as both scored the least amount of points in the UFL. As once again, looking at overall standings, Brahmos and Stallions, the two best teams. You can make the argument Brahmos probably a little bit better because of the defense. Everybody else looks mid as hell to start the year, so we'll go with that. And it sounds like
quick intermission here. Sorry, folks.
Quick stop there. We're all back. So there you go. That's what I've got for the UFL. I mean, like I said, it was, I don't know, it wasn't as, to be brutally honest, in week one, wasn't as good as I thought. And I don't, and you, automatically, half the people are going to go, well, your team lost, so of course it wasn't. Even if they would have won, the only action happened in the last, like, 2.5 minutes of the game. So we'll have to wait and see what happens here in week two, because maybe it'll get better.
Hopefully week two is a little bit better. We will have to see. Well, with that, do we have anything else that we got to talk about? I know we briefed it before the show, but did anything come up mid-thought while we were sitting and waiting on it?
Yeah, I got nothing.
Got nothing. Well,
I didn't get any pokey packs because I didn't think about it, and I haven't played the Game Boy because of Ben Alvin. So I have no Fire Red updates, which is probably bad news because that probably means that the run will stagnate, if you will, and probably not be picked up for a while. Because that's normally how this goes. It's either all or nothing when playing that game, and I think we're just wandered into the nothing stage here for a while. So, tough sledding on that.
Well, if that is all we've taken up, this is probably one of, I don't think, unless it's been a solo show, I don't know if we've had like a duo go only an hour 30 or under.
It's been a while. I mean,
it's been
last
a minute.
Year we had several, but this year is normally go longer than that, but I got nothing, no cringeworthy stuff to talk about. So
yeah, we don't got any more news from fundraisers that schools have done.
Yeah, that's probably for the best for
everybody. It is for the best, we hope. But anyhow, we thank you guys for joining us. Hopefully your Friday has gone well. Hopefully whenever this podcast gets out, hopefully your weekend goes good and you can start the next week hot. If you're in Iowa and you're a hunter, turkey season opens up on Monday. If you've already punched a youth tag, good for you, kids. We appreciate the hunting out there, the dads and the moms that are all taking their kids out to hunting, the aunts, the uncles, anybody who gets their kids out. But otherwise, we're going to have some great weather this weekend and coming up for the rest of the week, and hopefully that summer swing can kick into effect. Oh, my God, we didn't do a weather update.
That we did not.
That we did not. Wow. Well, we'll go with a quick one here. It's sunny in the Midwest today.
Oh, boy. Now we got to pull it up. You almost closed it out without
I
the
about
segment.
I did. This and, weather report brought to you by, even though it's technically not, we still want them to, Bush Lattes.
You know, I'm a little sad. We're speaking of that whispering ASMR thing you just did there.
Oh.
I'm sad that I didn't have any Pokemon cards to turn up the cringe meter. So looking at the map, there's actually a lot going on here. We got some freeze warnings, which is weird. It's in Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and Kentucky, parts of Tennessee as well. We've got several fire weather warnings, red flag warnings, high wind warnings, wind advisories for parts of North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, New Mexico, Eastern Colorado, Western Colorado, Arizona. We've got some winter weather advisories for central Colorado, a couple of winter storm warnings in southern California, some more winter weather advisories for parts of Utah, northeastern Nevada, Idaho, Oregon, Montana, a couple of winter storm warnings in Oregon and Wyoming, easy for me to come up with there. And then we've got some frost advisories on the southern part of that. That includes places like St. Louis and good old Missouri, Illinois, parts of Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. Also, notably, not necessarily a weather thing, but a 4.8 earthquake happened today in New Jersey. Felt across the island, as well as parts of New York and eastern Pennsylvania. First time that area has had a sizable earthquake since, I think, like 1793 or something.
I was going to say, you don't hear it there.
That was very strange, as, again, a winter storm warning and winter storm watch for parts of West Virginia. But that's the oddity of the day. The earthquake. So
indeed.
There you go. That's the breakdown for you. Also a fire weather watch for parts of Minnesota and North Dakota. And it looks like out in the Carson City area and Nevada there and parts of the Cali So there you go. Flip the script for the weather. It's normally the first thing, and today,
we close it out.
Get some other big brain idea. It's going to be the closer for this show today.
Well, there we go. And for all you Midwesterners, get ready because thunderstorms are coming through, so make sure you guys got all your non-perishables and such if you guys got to go downstairs in the good old storm shelters. I know tornadoes have been hitting across the Midwest, so for all you guys affected, we hope you guys are holding in there because I know tornado season is always just it's never fun. It's never good for all you people out there. Iowa gets them too. We had one a couple years ago here close to Winterset, but without further ado, I don't think we've got any more big brain moves, so we already kind of closed it out earlier, but if you guys want, we'll have social media clips coming. The podcast will be out to you, so make sure you guys hit that follow button, leave us some reviews and everything. We appreciate the growth that this podcast gets, even though it might be small, it might be large. We appreciate the growth because we love bringing it to you just for fun and just to have a couple of cold ones with the boys. So, hope you guys have a great rest of your weekend. And without further ado, this has been episode number 86 of The Covert Show. We'll see y'all later.